I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Guitar Nerds is sponsored by Neural DSP. And now Guitar Nerds listeners get 30% off all Neural DSP plugins with voucher code GUITARNERDS. Neural DSP create unique, industry-leading guitar and bass plugins designed to make you sound exactly how you want without any sacrifice in tone or dynamics. Their range includes signature plugin rigs available from some of the best modern guitarists in the world, like Corey Wong, Tosin Abasi, Adam Nolly Getgood, and Pliny. Plugins like Corey Wong's Archetype give you everything from crystal clear cleans and edge of breakup blues brashness, whilst the 14 series brings out all the crushing modern metal distortion you could possibly need. The point is that there's an amp here for every type of player, and with a 14-day free trial of any of the plugins at neuraldsp.com, with no credit card required, you can try before you buy and then purchase with the confidence that you're buying the right rig for you. And don't forget, enter code GUITARNERDS at the checkout for 30% off all Neural DSP plugins. Follow links in the description of this podcast or visit neuraldsp.com for more info.
Hello and welcome to the Ashdown podcast. The Guitar Nerds podcast.
Outrageous.
I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Matt Knight.
I would have never got away with that.
And Jay Cross.
Smashdown.
Yeah, I just thought I'd get it out of the way.
Smashdown.
Yes, there we are. Welcome to the 284th episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast, dear listener.
Blink 284.
Blink 284. Yes, absolutely. A wonderful band responsible for all sorts of invader humbuckingness.
My favourite songs, Slam It and What's My Age?
Yep. That's it.
Just Slam It.
Okay, cool. Well done. Well, anyway, yes, welcome to the podcast. This week we're gonna talk a bit more about effects. Last week was quite effects heavy, I think, but there's so much.
I didn't listen. I wasn't here.
No,
I didn't listen.
That's fine.
I was thinking. I thought about listening today, but I didn't.
It doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that I only really. Loads of people say, "Oh, I like working at home because, like, I listen to podcasts all day. Don't have to worry about blah blah." I find it really difficult to listen to podcasts at home, and actually, a lot of it is down to I don't get when people say. Oh, the thing I really like about podcasts is I can just sort of tune out whilst they're on and it doesn't matter if I miss anything. I'm completely the opposite. Like, that's how I feel about music. When I'm listening to a podcast, I need the entire narrative. If I miss something, I have to go back and re-listen. And basically, I only listen to podcasts now when I'm running. And there's just too much fantasy football stuff going on for me to waste my time listening to you lot. Now that the Premier League's back in, I've been listening to fantasy football podcasts while I've been running.
That's smart.
Sorry I didn't listen last week, but I'm sure it was rubbish.
Yeah, it was fine. It was average. Mark Packham was on it, so it was, you know.
It was just
a sales pitch for the Patreon by Mark Packham for 45 minutes, but no, it wasn't. He was actually lovely to have him back. It was the first time I'd spoken to him in ages. So it was actually very nice to have him on the podcast. But yes,
that's not true. We all sat on the beach together last week.
Yeah, we did. But that was that after?
Or before? Oh, no, maybe
yeah,
it was.
Yeah, that was after we'd recorded that podcast. It was lovely for us all to get together on the beach and drink a few brewskis. I did enjoy it. Hmm.
But he says drinking another brewski.
Yes. Actually, I tell you what, I've started ordering my whiskey through Flaviar.
Oh, here we go. He's got his referral code ready to go.
Guitar Nerd's drunk.
Well, it's true, actually. If anyone does sign up to Flaviar with my referral code, I get £50 worth of credit in their online shop. But anyway, I signed up to Flaviar and I was like, this is going to be fantastic. I don't need to order a bottle of whiskey off of like the whiskey exchange this week. Brilliant. That was 2 weeks ago now, and it's still there is no whiskey here. So I've actually run out. I'm drinking my backup, which is rosé. You know, which is
wow. You could have at least made it a frosé. Mm. You know, enjoy the last of the summer.
Yes, I could. Anyway, So the Guitar Nerds podcast, right? Well, I announced, dear listener, on our Facebook group actually earlier today when we were recording it. That I'm now heading up the digital marketing for Ashdown Amplification, a British bass amp brand who I happen to have played for years, which is very wonderful. But I thought it was important for me to be transparent about that, you know, just so that everyone can start accusing me of shilling them, even though I've played their amps for years. So,
You've never talked about it on the podcast, Joe.
You've never talked
about Ashdown.
No, yeah, yes, exactly. I'm sure that's what we'll get. I'm glad there's nothing. Oh no, they do have the new basses released this year, so Gear of the Year is going to be super awkward. We don't have anyone who's impartial now, so it's Gear of the Year is going to be a fun one. But yes, I've actually been doing that for about a month, but I realised I hadn't told anyone that I was doing it, and so I thought I ought to.
In the interest of full disclosure, you know, it's good to be open.
Exactly. But it's great. They sent me loads of stuff, like 5 amps and 2 basses, for me to mess around with here, and you know, come up with some.
Oh, that's good, because you actually don't have any basses or
or amps.
Actually, you don't have any Ashdown bass amps, do you? So that's really handy.
No. Yes. Yeah. They sent me 5, and I had 2 already, and. I have 3 Ashdown cabs and they sent me another cab. But yes, there's so much stuff here. I almost have one of everything in their catalogue now.
Send me the low rider. I'll look after that.
I tell you what, I've been spending a lot of time on that low rider. I'm actually really into it. At first, you know, I sent my band the picture of the two basses. I've got the Saint in gold and the low rider in black. And I sent it to them and I was like, I'm going to start playing which one of these, you know, is everyone okay with that? Because, you know, we're quite a fussy bunch. And none of them likes the low rider. I think it's just extreme shapes are a bit of a no-no. And so I was like, well, it's going to be the same. But I've been playing the low rider more and more over the last couple of days. And I'm like, oh, I'm not sure I care what they think. I really like this bass. And I think I'm going to do what you suggested, Matt, and put some flat rounds on it.
Yes.
Because you played a red one with flat rounds.
I did. And it was great. Yeah, I mean, you know, I must admit, I'm thinking about getting a bass of some sort. You posted a picture of, which I don't think you have anymore, the 78 Music Master bass.
Oh, yeah, I do still have that, yeah.
Do you?
Oh, yeah, do you want it?
Maybe I want to buy it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can just long-term loan it to you. It's got it's got a lovely set of Labella flat rounds on it at the moment.
I'll cut those straight off. Cut those straight off. I'm sure they're worthless. Nice set of
hybrid slinkies on.
Hybrid slinkies on. Yeah. Sort of unbranded 10-year-old guitar shop. It was always the funny thing. I think, you know, whenever we cleaned out the stock room, you know, after every year, there'd always be an inevitable, like, right, take everything out, you know, clean it out. And there'd be like a squashed packet of strings from like 15 years ago, like tucked away somewhere. And you'd be like, yep, don't put those ones on the shelf. No. Yeah. Oh, that sounds good. Yeah. I'm really keen to have a short scale bass and basically just be one of those guitar players that play short scale bass.
I might
like
send
guitar.
It up to you. It needs some work at the moment because the pickup doesn't really work. And with the I'm gonna change the pickup. The pickup's a bit muffed on it, but it's do you remember on those Music Masters? It's actually a Strat pickup with a cover on it, so it's just a 6-pole Strat pickup with a cover to make it look like a bass pickup on the old 70s Music Masters. And actually, that's the same that they do on the Broncos today. It is a Strat pickup on the Squire Bronco. Yeah, if you take that cover off, you'll see all the pole pieces in the wrong place. But just, you know,
vintage correct
exactly. It has a very specific sound. But it doesn't sound great. And so I was like, well, I'm going to change the pickup in this. And there are obviously lots of great options out there for pickup alternatives, specifically for Music Master pickups as well. There are some companies that do great options. I'm sure I've mentioned it before, but James's Home of Tone even do a Squire Bronco upgrade set, which include a pickup, like a harness and a load of other stuff. What's the pickup company that James does lots with?
Oh,
I can't remember the name.
I want to say McNelly, but
yes, that's it. That is it. Yes, it is McNelly. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. So it's because I was thinking Mother Mary, but I was like, no, that's the Strat company he does. So it's McNelly. Yeah, you're right.
Did we ever talk about just on James's Home of Tone? Did we ever talk about the fact that at one point there's a picture of it on his blog where he modded one of those mini Jazz Masters, so it had like one pickup and stuff.
No, I didn't see that.
That must be really recent because those only came out.
It was, I think he got one like straight after launch, and then basically sort of modded it so it had like a different bridge on it, and it was like one pickup had like a custom plate on it.
Where's the pickup in the Jazz Master? It was like bridge pickup, or is it in the middle?
It was a bridge pickup.
Oh, that's cool. That's very cool.
How did it pee in the middle? What's wrong with you?
I don't know, because it's a mini one. Maybe they're just trying to make it a bit, you know, like a ukulele.
Where's the one pickup going to be on this entry-level guitar? Are they putting it in the middle?
Wally. Yeah, fine. Okay. But that does sound very cool. Yeah, I needed to change the pickup in this. And I was thinking, I'll get your guys' opinion on this. I was like, it's a 77, 78 Music Master. It was black, but someone has sort of repainted the wear at some point with what looks like by throwing a bottle of nail polish at it, because there's like drip lines all over the place where the finish is sort of dried onto it. So it's, Music Masters in good condition. 70s Music Masters go for about £1,000. This is far from being in good condition. And the tuners are a bit busted. Like, if I really wanted to either sell it or take it seriously as an instrument, I'd have to change those as well. I've already changed the bridge because the bridge had rusted. So, this is far from being a sort of premium sale or retaining its money. So I was like, well, the pickup.
You got it quite cheap as well, didn't you?
I did get it very cheap. Yeah, I bought it for like £400. This is what I spoke about it on the podcast, ages ago, probably like a year ago when I got it. But this turned up in a bin liner.
Yeah.
Someone sent it through the post in a bin liner. So it's remarkable that the tuners are still attached, to be honest, and that the neck isn't snapped. But I guess, shows how robust those old 70s Fenders were. But so I was thinking, because there's no real money in it, I didn't invest that much in it, so I don't mind it being a bit of a project. Should I actually get a different pickup fitted, as in, should I have it rooted for something a bit better? Because the tiny Music Master pickups, they do limit what I can get. Even when it comes to the replacement pickups for it, they're kind of great pickup companies doing the best that they can with, trying to wind a bass pickup into a Strat sort of shape, thing. So, what do you think? Do I stick with that to keep it all original, or should I get a bigger pickup and maybe fit like a...
Put a humbucker in it.
You think?
Invader.
Like a Fidelitron?
Quarter pounder.
Okay, there we go.
I think if it's a bit of a project and it's never going to be like... It's never going to be a mint condition one, is it?
No.
I think you might be better off, just go for it. Why don't you just, put a different pickup in it, sort of mod it a bit. Maybe even like, depends how long you want to, your time frame, but yeah, you could like strip it, get it refinished, spend a bit of time on it, and it's just a nice little personal project.
Well, that's kind
of
it. I just
think it's important to make sure that like you're not going mad for the sake of going mad. Like,
right, yeah.
if you're gonna do something mad, make sure that like you are actually going to play it. That's what I would say, because otherwise you'll regret it, because this isn't like just doing mod mode with a 150 quid guitar or whatever. This is something that, you know, and maybe this is me being a bit too wet about things, but like, even if you're not incredibly attached to it, something of that age might mean something to someone if you were to sell it at some point. Do you know what I mean? And like, completely changing it just for the sake of having a laugh, when you're then going to be like, oh well, I'm not going to sell this, I'm not going to play this, I'm not going to sell it, whatever.
He was going to give it to me. I was hoping he'd do all of that hard work and then be like, yeah, I'll give it to you on long-term loan, so I'm not using it.
Well, yeah, but like
50 years later, podcast episode 6000 or whatever, be like, oh, I had this old music master. It's like, Jeff, I still got it.
Yeah, celebrating the 100th anniversary of the of that guitar.
Of Guitar Nerds.
No, I just think if you're gonna do something mad, just make sure that it's like, if you're gonna put like a mud bucker in it, just make sure that is exactly what you want to do. Otherwise, just like get it back up to spec and like, you know.
Yeah.
You don't care what it looks like, not really, do you?
The mudbucker was the obvious change for me. Was to maybe get a mudbucker fitted in the neck where it would be in like a Gibson EBO.
God, that sounds awful.
And get a new scratch plate fitted that covers up sort of the hole where the original pickup would be in the middle.
Just get a P-Bass pickup, mate. Just get a P-Bass pickup.
I did think about that as well. I love the idea of a reversed P-Bass pickup in a Music Master. It would be very cool. It would kind of make it look a bit similar to those new modern player series Mustangs that are kicking around at the moment. But we'll see. We'll see. I'm not sure. I'm not 100% on it yet, but it is definitely cool. Anyway. Moving on from that, Matt, you lent me an MD200.
I did
last
Tell
week.
Me all about it, Joe. Kind of want the full pitch.
Okay, fantastic. First time I've spent any time with a Boss MD200. For dear listener, the MD200 is the smaller, the 200 series multi-modulation pedal by Boss. So of course you had this originally in the 500 series, which is the big long wide pedal. This the 200 chassis I'm a big fan of, because it's, you know, it's top mounted jacks, which is great for actually getting on a complex pedal board. It's MIDI compatible with this new mini jack thing that Boss are doing. I guess it's not that new anymore that you guys are doing mini jack, but I thought that was kind of interesting and cool. I'm surprisingly into it. So a thing that I've never got on with that Boss have done is Boss phasers. I've never been a big fan of those. Not that they're bad, just comparatively. I think, you know, growing up on like Phase 90s and stuff like that, Boss phasers are a very different type of sound. Both the phaser and the vintage phaser on the MD200 are absolutely incredible. And just the fact that you can blend in like another effect on them. So I can like add a fuzz to the phaser, which I don't fully understand yet. Can you explain that to me at all?
No, because I'm not 100% sure what you've done, Joe. Have you just got a broken one?
No, it's got like I can add like a drive effect to the
It might
to the
be
phase.
I would have to remind myself very quickly.
No, it's totally
but
fine.
I'm
basically
throwing
you in the deep end.
What we try to do with all the 200s is obviously go down a little bit more of the Strymon route, I guess, in some ways to oversimplify it. But where the DD500, the MD and the RV500 were, you know, super in depth, and you know, you just like with everything from Boss, you can tweak to the nth degree. I think we wanted something that was a little bit more hands-on and kind of easier to dial in. So what we did was on the MD200 was just give you three parameter controls which vary depending on what effect you're on. So
that's right. And on the phaser, that first parameter control, whilst it's a rotary, it just flicks between two settings, and one of them says like I think FU Oh, wait, maybe it was just having a... I assumed it meant fuzz.
Yeah, no, the vintage phaser, it has a inbuilt distortion. So, yes, yeah. you can add a bit of drive and you can adjust that drive and tone. But, yeah, you've got a kind of standard Boss phaser and sort of those ones which are... You can control like the resonance and the manual.
Yeah.
But that particular vintage phaser, because it's going down for more of that Phase 90 vibe, you've got an inbuilt sort of distortion in there as well.
Yeah. I thought that specifically was absolutely gorgeous, the vintage phaser. Like a really, as a big phaser fan, I would be hard pushed to find something that I'd rather have on my board than that vintage phaser tone from Boss. Mm. Also, first time I've, like, it's got a CE1 chorus on it, and I was playing around with that, and I was like, oh my goodness, I really like this sound, and the CE1's kind of one of those pedals that passed me by. I never really tried it when Boss released it. Like, I never got hold of one from Boss, and I never, you know, tried one in a shop or anything like that, so I'm aware of its heritage, but I was just kind of like, yeah, it's this cool thing, it's a cool chorus. This is the first time I've actually been able to try like a CE1 style chorus properly and really sort of take it to town, and I was like, after a while I was like, I'm really enjoying this. And I use either the Dimension C a lot, or I use my Strymon Deco, which has a sort of a chorus setting on it. And so I decided to sort of ABC the three pedals to see which one I preferred. And I was surprised to find that I enjoyed the CE1 the most. The Dimension C, as much as I love it, is a little all or nothing because of the, you know, the lack of any rotary controls. And I quite like a subtle chorus. And the CE1 was just like gorgeous, rich, lush, very vintage sounding, not too cheesy. I had a wonderful time. And just then, you know, the fact that you've thrown a slicer in there as well, for me was wonderful. The vibrato, obviously fantastic because it's a VB2, but having access to a slicer.
Mm. Obviously slicer is now discontinued.
Mm. It's so, part of the MS3, right? The slicer.
Yes, that effect, yeah. It does appear in other things. I mean, the again, CE1 I think is great.
That's like one of the first, isn't it?
Yeah, so interesting story about the CE1. So before Boss became released the compact, we had the CE1. And then obviously Roland were making, you know, the AG5 and the B-bar and all these other sort of crazy big pedals.
I'm just going to pretend I know what any of that stuff
is. Yeah,
basically, sure.
What we would say sort of what we classed as BC or before compact. And yeah, there was DC,
ridiculous.
C1, we had the DM1, stuff like that. But what was interesting, the CE1, it was the chorus circuit from the JC120. In a box that you could obviously, that was originally designed for, I guess it was designed for guitar players, but it never really sold that well on launch. So this was 1975, and they were backlogged on, you know, just they had loads of stock piling up, they're like, I can't sell it. Obviously, you know, there wasn't as many dealers of Boss and Roland gear back then. There wasn't obviously as many music shops, but it wasn't until Herbie Hancock was pictured in like Jazz Piano Monthly or something in America. And next to his, I think he had like a Rhodes or something like that. Next to that was the CE1. And everyone was like, oh my God, like the secret to his piano sound was a CE1. And all of a sudden, they went from selling nothing to 18 months worth of stock, like, overnight.
Wow.
And that basically, like, pumped enough money into the company to make more and then, obviously, to develop other products. But there's quite a lot of people mod the early CE1s because the pot and the preamp inside is more geared towards a piano rather than a guitar. But, yeah, really interesting how... And I guess you still get that now in some ways, but yeah, it was almost like a commercial failure. And then
40 years later, you're still pushing that influencer marketing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
you know, really very little has changed from that side of things, you know.
I think it's interesting because Roland's got a lot of those sort of products that came out that were sort of happy accidents that end up like creating a genre, like the 303 for like acid and all of that. And it's just like, yeah, they were, it was supposed to be a bass, it was supposed to be a virtual bass player for people who played organ in like music halls. It's like, yeah, you can play organ and then you can have your 606 doing the drums and your 303 doing the bass. It's like, no one wanted them. They were terrible. And then, you know, some people in Chicago went, oh, if I turn the resonance all the way up, it makes this really funny sound. And then if I put a drum beat over it, there we go. Acid House. Wow. And now they're $2,500 for one box. Yeah.
But then it's the same with like the 808, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like Afrika Bambaataa.
Yeah.
And all the stuff that he did with that.
Yeah.
And like pushing the 80s hip hop stuff. I mean, I you know, my knowledge of this is pretty limited, but like I've watched that 808 documentary that's on Amazon Prime, and I've watched that Hip Hop Evolution documentary that's on Netflix, I think, and they talk a lot about the 808, and my understanding is like Afrika was the guy who kind of pushed that.
Yeah.
So, you know, like you say, I can't imagine they ever intended the 808 to, you know, launch this whole new...
Yeah, and I guess, you know, if we think about it in terms of guitars, I mean, Les Paul, you know, discontinued in 1960 because no one wanted one. And then all of a sudden, you know, Eric Clapton's on the front cover of this John Mayer record and everyone's like, my God, he's playing a Les Paul, I've got to go and get one. And, you know, even modern, the Klon... You know, they'd been out for years. They were expensive, sure, compared to a lot of other things on the market. But then you get people like John Mayer's got one of his pedal and everyone's like, got to have a Klon.
Yeah, I guess, you know, so.
Dumbles, it's that sort of thing, isn't it? A lot of the time, you know, these products, you know, take that kind of form and they sort of just bob along and then all of a sudden they become like massive staples of like guitar playing or musical history.
Yeah, yeah.
Going on now at Guitar Center, the Ernie Ball Great Gear Giveaway, where one lucky winner will win over $50,000 in prizes from Ernie Ball Music Man, SKB, Electro Voice, Dynacord, Pedal Train, Vic Firth, Latin Percussion, Zildjian, Tune Track, Guitar Center, DNA Guitar Gear, DW, Remo, TC Electronic, Blue Microphone, Universal Audio, Ampeg, Orange Amplifiers, JHS Pedals, Korg, Martin Guitars, and Ernie Ball. To enter, find codes inside selected packs of Ernie Ball strings in Guitar Center stores and at guitarcenter.com between now and October 30th. US residents only. Visit ernieball.com/great gear giveaway for full official rules. Ernie Ball presents the Great Gear Giveaway. Going on now, only at Guitar Center. This episode of Guitar Nerds is brought to you by Shergold Guitars and their latest electric guitar, the Provocateur. Celebrated by Total Guitar Magazine as one of the most refined single cuts on the market, with endlessly satisfying playability and a flawless set of tones, the Shergold Provocateur combines remarkable specification with a retro vibe for a unique and bona fide rock guitar. From the brand that once powered the likes of Joy Division and is now championed by modern guitar pioneers and So I Watch You From Afar and many others, comes a fresh and exciting range of electric guitars. Designed by legendary British guitar luthier Patrick James Eggle and featuring a roasted mahogany neck and a solid mahogany body loaded with USA-made Seymour Duncan pickups, it's easy to see why Guitarist Magazine officially voted the Provocateur one of the best electrics of 2019. You can find your nearest Shergold dealer at shergoldguitars.com. And if you're not in the UK, don't fear. Many UK-based Shergold dealers have super awesome international shipping options to guarantee your Shergold will make it to you in the most far-flung of places. Proudly stand out from the crowd and discover yours today at shergoldguitars.com. Shergold Guitars. Be your own original.
Sure, absolutely. Now, we've been sent a guitar this week from Stuart at SBC Guitars, Scatterbrain Concepts. Now, I've had Stuart on a Friday special episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast before, and he makes extraordinarily sort of ergonomically minded, very wooden, instruments. Woody.
Very wooden.
Yeah, they are very
that
woody.
That doesn't sound very complimentary, I've got to be honest.
You know, there's lots of wood going on. It's all about the wood. But he sent me this guitar that we talked about a bit on the Friday special. This guitar, the Cygnus, that he built for the Holy Grail guitar show, that obviously didn't go ahead this year, and it was the last one. But it was part of this Holy Grail reclaimed wood project where you had to make everything out of kind of reclaimed wood. So
that's cool.
Yeah, it was very cool, and I thought it was the design that he went for, this sort of it's you'll have to, I'll pop the link in the description of the podcast, dear listener. You have to see it because it's impossible to describe, but incredibly ergonomic and modern in design, fan fretted, very sort of short scale, incredibly lightweight. And the body almost looks leafed, like turning pages of a book, and
it's madness.
Yeah,
it's absolute madness.
It's crazy. You should see the inside of it, because he's designed it with sort of reeds inside the guitar to make it more resonant, which is just an incredible sort of work of engineering, more than anything else. But so the guitar's made from the body and pickup covers. And the fretboard are Brazilian mahogany from a Victorian countertop. The neck is 70s Sapella from Stuart's own childhood home. And the top is Scots pine from a Victorian roof rafter. And the headstock's some 70s oak. But it's just, it's the most outrageous instrument for sort of incredible sort of workmanship. He wound the pickups himself as well, and they're
they're
Victorian mahogany.
The bobbins of the pickups are even made of wood, which is
the cavity cover on the back was made from a plate found in a charity shop, and the inlay material is all recycled wire. But it's just such an incredible, I just can't believe this instrument's been made. It's such a wonderful work of art, and there's so much attention to detail in kind of every aspect of it. Obviously, it's very, very modern for sort of my taste.
Is it for sale?
I assume he is selling it. He loves it very, very much. I think this was a massive undertaking for Stuart.
Yeah, I mean, it looks pretty. Yeah. Not that it was just like pieced together, but so much thought just in terms of just the actual design. I mean, it's madness.
Yeah, exactly. On the inside, on the underside of the, but behind that top, the body's kind of sort of semi-hollowed with a large center block, but the reeds are less than a millimeter to help sort of amplify the acoustic sound, whilst keeping the sort of solid block idea. But it's just such an incredible instrument. I just think an absolute work of art. And Stuart, obviously, SBC Guitars make completely custom guitars, so anything anyone wants to design. Now, if this is your bag, if sort of something incredibly unique and specific and sort of ergonomic and modern is your bag, then Stuart and SBC Guitars are absolutely the place to look at, dear listener, because I was incredibly impressed with this guitar. It's the sort of thing that needs to be played properly. And of course, what I'm going to do is put it in a funny tuning, play a couple of chords with loads of shimmer reverb on it. But nonetheless, I'm going to enjoy doing that. But it is a.
I can just hear the my shop brain is going into overdrive, and I can just hear the warranty request being like, "Hello there. Yes, I'm afraid I dropped the guitar, and I have split the fourth reed from the left. Can you please supply me with a warranty replacement fourth reed from the left?"
Yeah, that's that. Yes, that's exactly what's going to happen. I mean, this guitar is very important, Stuart. He was very like sort of on the phone to me as soon as, you know, it was on the day that it was supposed to arrive. So I think this. He was,
that's mad. He's not happy
letting it out of his sight.
He clearly doesn't know you. I mean, yeah. I wouldn't lend you a fiver, let alone a guitar
exactly.
that I'd...
I mean, it's just lent up against a wall right now, to be honest.
It's just that the radiator's not on, is it?
Always. Yes, anyway, an absolutely wonderful guitar, so well worth checking out. There's a couple more bits, but I'd like us to talk about some news, because we've got some incredibly interesting bits of news to talk about in this, which is something of an effects special. So let's do
that's
the news.
Episode is an effects special.
Yes, this year, just because it seems like effects companies...
What do you mean this year? All we ever do is get grief from people saying, "Oh, you don't talk about enough effects, about guitars. Yeah. All you talk about is pedals.
You don't talk about old blues amps and Stratocasters enough." No. But actually, only half of the podcast hosts even really use effects pedals, so it's a wonder that we managed to get these things past.
I barely play guitar anymore. I'm only here for... I've grandfathered into this role.
Yeah, that's true. Anyway, here, let's do the news. So, first up on the news. I guess let's start with the elephant in the room. The Strymon Dark Sky.
Yes.
I don't know which one of you is doing this.
I thought it was... what's going to be interesting is that there must be some sort of spy in the world of guitar effects, because not just one company have released reverb pedals, but three.
No, that's true. Yes, we should deal with them all at once,
In the last week. All very different, you know, in their ways, but I think...
Did Boss not get the memo when you released the OC5?
No, yeah, we're like, "Oh, octave? Oh, no. Yeah, what were we thinking? That doesn't sound like reverb at all." We'll talk about the Strymon first. So, yeah, Strymon were teasing this for about a week before the product release. They actually came out the same day as the new Boss Octave, which I'm sure we'll talk about at some point. Yes. But yeah, just interestingly, we go from 6 months of nothing to a point where loads of companies end up doing things at the same time.
Yeah.
So yes, the Strymon Night Sky, the time warped reverberator. It's got a nice picture of an astronaut on the front of their homepage. This thing is kind of a bit mad, kind of genius. It is effectively a shimmer reverb. To put it simply, a shimmer reverb, but it does so much more than that.
But then you already do a shimmer reverb.
Well, you've got the El Capistan, which is like their tape delay with reverb, and you've got the Big Sky, which is obviously, it's a bit of everything, you know, plates and springs and halls and shimmer. But this is, yeah, on the front of it, and if you listen to demos, you'd think shimmer reverb. Actually, once you dive in a bit more, it opens up to be something a bit crazy. So you've got a reverb algorithm that then can be affected in a multitude of different ways. So you've got a modulation control, first of all. So there's a mod, I would say, section, so speed, depth, and then different shapes, which affect the reverb. You've then got a decay section. So what's interesting here is you've got different, you've got obviously got your length and then your size and pitch for the reverb tail, but you can give different texture options. So things like sparse, dense, and diffuse. So these are sort of like your ambient control. So for example,
that's a lot of depth to the sort of...
There's a lot of depth. Yes, it is in an insane amount. So basically, you've then got, like sparse, for example, is a granular sounding reverb. Dense is a more plate-like reverb, and Diffuse is a slow-building atmospheric wash.
Ooh, I have one of those most mornings.
I would have just called it the Eno. And then you've got a quantize control. So quantize selects the response and range of the size/pitch control to variously and continuously change the pitch over a 2.5 octave range. And you can make that quantize smooth, half step, or in a scale, which I thought was quite interesting. Tone control. So there's a low pass filter or there's a regen filter that takes off some of the high end as the reverb tail cycles through the tone control.
Oh.
Then we get into the voice section, which is pretty mad. So you can basically select the interval of the shimmer effect. That goes, you've got octave down, second, fourth, fifth, and then the same up. And then what's quite cool is you can have that on the input, so everything is affected by that, or just the reverb trails.
Oh, my God.
And they've basically created, you know, everyone's heard of shimmer, but have you heard of glimmer?
Glimmer.
Which is basically their new take on shimmer. So glimmer creates a harmonically enhanced spectrum from the reverb output. So you can basically engage the glimmer control. They've even put a little bit of drive in there. So it's basically a bit of everything.
Wow.
Rather than like, I'm going to dial in a, you know, 63 Fender Spring Reverb, it's like, no. No, you're going to dial in the set. You're going to dial in the sound of ambience and the ever expanding universe.
That is the most amount of depth anyone's ever gone into an ambient.
Well, this is the thing. Like, this is obviously aimed really at
shoegazers.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think this is not just guitar players and pedal boards. This is definitely a studio tool. But what is crazy, and this, I'm sure, I don't know if I still really get this or not. And I've watched a few videos and I'm like, this is just where they've taken it to madness level. It's got a sequencer in it. So you can sequence going through, there's 8 preset buttons on the front. So you can have 8 presets there, and then you can dial in another between 1 to 8. And then if you change the color, you can go between 9 to 16. And in sequence mode, you can use these buttons to enable or disable the step for the sequence and set size and pitch for each step. So yeah, you can basically have like a sequenced reverb. So you can sequence through all those voices and the different modulations. But you can also like morph between settings. I've seen some just bizarre stuff. It is just, yeah, I guess it's just a bit of madness, really. I can't tell if it's just over the top or just absolutely genius.
Yeah.
I guess going down the lines of the hologram electronics, you know, the Infinite Jets, and, you know, sort of taking a leaf out of those sort of products and going, we can do something.
Yeah.
That gives you, you know, everything. Yeah, they basically describe it as the reverberant synthesis machine. So Night Sky is a reverberant synthesis workstation and a powerful hands-on experimental sound design platform.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
I mean, I think it's interesting, you know, you mentioned the fact that a couple of companies have released reverb pedals this week, but when you were talking about, when you were just describing that and saying, you know, this is them trying to do something a lot more kind of expansive, it's not just like a regular reverb pedal, you're not saying, oh, I want to sound like, you know, like a 63 reverb or, you know, a 65 reverb, or I want to sound like this particular plate or anything. When you were describing that, the thing that kind of ironically it reminded me of was the Eventide Black Hole, which was really the first pedal of that kind of type that I really kind of came across. And the problem with that was when it first came out, which was, you know, I mean, probably 2009, 2010, something like that, was it? Maybe even earlier. It was so prohibitively expensive. It was so expensive. You know, we're talking 10 years ago, that pedal was like £400.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I mean, that's expensive even now, and pedals are expensive now. But you know, the funny thing with that is, of course, Eventide released a new version of the Black Hole, which you know is interesting, because it kind of goes, it's almost going the other way from what Strymon are doing with the Dark Sky.
Yeah, because the Black Hole already exists, right?
Well, the Black Hole did already exist. It was in the larger Eve. And actually, sorry, Matty, I don't think you mentioned that the Dark Sky comes in a similar, if not the same, chassis to the Volante.
Yes. And just to be clear, Night Sky. Dark
what did
sky.
I say?
Oh, sorry. No, it's because I wrote Dark Sky in the comments,
sorry,
but it's
sky.
Called Night Sky. I'm sorry. Yes, that was my fault.
So they've basically taken the same chassis as the as the Volante.
Right, gotcha. but yeah, very cool. I'm interested. So the original Black Hole was that sort of size. So it was like the larger version of the Eventide pedal. So if you're familiar with the time factor and the mod factor and stuff like that. Uh-huh. And it was just so prohibitively expensive. And the new one is almost looks like it was made by Strymon, because it's in that kind of like Flint size box, you know, the class, or like a Blue Sky size box, 2 foot switches, just a handful of controls, a few presets, you know, actually looks super simple. And If this sounds anything like the some of the sounds that you could get from that Black Hole, I mean, this is just going to be an absolute game changer, because I loved that pedal. I absolutely loved that pedal. It was so amazing. I mean, just to kind of to like, there's some, they've got the name right, Black Hole. I mean, that's fantastic. On the website, on the page for this, they've actually got a quote from Carl Sagan, which again, even more just like pushing this into the territory, so you know what you're dealing with here. I don't know what the price is.
It's actually
$280 US.
Yeah, I think it's listing in UK stores at 279, I think.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so it's still the top end of what you would expect to pay for a kind of quote unquote compact reverb pedal, but it's still, you know, that's by no means is it like a bonkers amount of money, especially considering how expensive the original Black Hole was. And it really was such a fantastic effect, such a great sound. And it was just so expensive that, and it came out at a time when people weren't used to spending that sort of money on pedals. So I'm really excited about this. I think this will be very, very cool. And I think it's great that Eventide are doing it, because, you know, I've had a couple of conversations with people about this pedal, and that's what everyone buys the H9 for.
Absolutely. Do you use much more on yours, Matt, other than
I actually use a bit of everything on mine. It's a Swiss Army knife. I mean, I use it for like reverbs, bit of delay, some of the modulation stuff if I'm not, you know, covering it with a, with an individual pedal. But yeah, the the ambient algorithms. I mean, bear in mind as well that when the, you know, the bigger Eventide pedal, was it called the Black Hole?
The Black Hole. Yeah, yeah.
You know, and yes, that was like, yeah, nearly £500. You've got to remember that for the people when that first came out, the only time they had been able to get that algorithm before was in an Eventide H9000 rack unit that was £8,000. So, you know, to have that in a pedal and now to have it in something that, you know, you can do the ambient thing from Eventide without having to buy an H9 and download the algorithm or buy an H9 Max and have it in there. I think that's incredible. And I remember when the original one came out, Mike Hermans, who's a great demonstrator on YouTube, I think it just goes under Mike Hermans, but his sort of other name is Pop to the Chemist. He demoed it with Music for Airports.
Nice.
So he
the greatest record of all time.
Yeah, Brian Eno's Music for Airports. So he picked up that riff and demoed that, and I was like, I'm sold. Basically,
it doesn't take much, does it? Let's be honest. I mean, that was kind of like hyper targeted at you and me, Matty.
Yeah, exactly. I think this is great. I think now, you know, a couple of sort of big contenders, I would say, have entered the arena.
A new challenger has entered the arena.
Yeah, for ambient stuff, because a lot of the times, you know, it was more boutique companies, you know, much smaller, maybe taking old Blood Noise, you know, and they're sitting there in their program DSP, they're a much smaller team. And, you know, they've got the kind of freedom to take the risk, as it were, to kind of do something a bit more wacky and a bit more out there.
Yeah.
You know, things like the Minim or the Rever. Mm-hmm. And now you've suddenly got like, yeah, Strymon are like, well, you know, I think we can have a go at that. And then, you know, just really take it to the max. And then Eventide have gone, we've got the algorithms. Why don't we just put it in a pedal? Because obviously the problem with using an H9 is you've got to edit it with the app. Realistically, it's very difficult to sort of edit on the pedal itself. Or you've got to have that massive, you know, old school one. So I think this is a great option. And I reckon this is the start from Eventide. This is the start for them to do a few more of their sort of top algorithms, I reckon, in a smaller compact. I reckon we'll see more of those.
I'll be excited to see this. I was thinking about buying my guitarist Tim a big, like an ambient reverb pedal for his birthday, and I've been trying to work out what to get, because I'm a big fan of the Plateau and the Double Tank, which are two of the Line 6 Helix reverbs, but they're both based on the Big Sky Shimmer and the Big Sky Plate Mod, sort of respectively. So I've been kind of trying to think. I was like, I don't really want to spend all the money on a Big Sky. They're still very expensive. So I've been trying to think of other things that would do massive ambient expansive sounds. Might well be worth a shout.
And not only have Strymon and Eventide released a reverb pedal, we've also got some updated ones from New Neighbor as well. So New Neighbor had the Wet reverb, which has been out for quite a while, but they've always been updating it. Few other people might remember it from, they had a series of pedals that you could plug in a USB cable and you could update it to any one of their other range. So if you bought their reverb, you could turn it into their chorus.
Which
is cool, which there was a cool idea, but I think they've sort of realized that actually we weren't really selling anything apart from just like the blank one. So there's been a few adjustments since then, but they've brought out three new pedals, the Wet, what they call the Elements series. So the Wet reverb, which is the version 5 now, the Seraphim Shimmer, which is the version 2, and the Echelon Echo, which is also the version 2. So those ones, they have removed the ability to kind of alter these into any pedal you want. They're a little bit more sort of straightforward. But the Wet was a fantastic ambient reverb as well. They've also added
love
in
that it's
the,
so simple in comparison to everything else we've talked about.
I had one for a little bit and I thought it was wicked. It was really, really good. You know, just some really sort of immerse, sort of just full on reverbs that didn't really take over your whole signal. Just sort of a nice wash in the background. And they've actually added in a reverb from their Immerse 2, which is their sort of really big, full on sort of ambient reverb.
Right.
And these ones, $199. So I think this one's a real, real good one for people as well.
Yeah, that's a fantastic price. And they all look, I'm quite interested in their little shimmer. I like that it's dead simple, just with a mixed depth and shimmer control.
Yeah, I think, I'm just trying to, where did I have it here? We were talking about this just before we started. So obviously the Neuron was their intelligent gain pedal, which came out, I think, NAMM last year. The Tri-Chorus and the Immerse, which has got, is their like multi-mode reverb. Everything else looks like it's being discontinued or sold out. And then this Element series takes over. I think, which is, I guess, maybe a slight shame if they've taken it off, but the old ones had like a Cat 5 cable input, and that's where you could plug in their foot switch. So their foot switch allowed you to basically have 6 presets on board, and you could like morph between them with an expression pedal. But it looks like they have taken that off the new ones, which is a little bit of a shame. Because that was a very, very cool feature. You could basically, switch between 8 different types of effects. So you could have, like, you could program the chorus into a delay and the reverb into a, you know, chorus or whatever. This one allowed you to actually have all 4 programmed into one, and then you could switch between them, and then you could morph between the 2 presets, which I thought was very cool.
Oh, that's very cool.
But I think they've probably
discontinued, especially at that price point, they've simplified everything.
Yeah, I think in favour of maybe something a little bit simpler. Mm. That's just, again, maybe down the similar route of the Eventide, just going, let's pick out the things that are popular and make them into a nice little pedal.
I'm more excited about the Eventide and these new neighbours than I am the Strymon Night Sky, just because that Strymon just, that was a lot of controls for me.
It looks very overwhelming. Like I said, I think it's definitely a little bit more of a studio tool, I think, in some ways.
Yeah, for sure. I love that you can hone in the sound to that much, but I kind of feel, especially with things like shimmer reverbs, and this is just a personal thing, listener, I like the pedal to be like, this is how I sound. And then I'm just controlling, you know, more or less like how much of it you want. I want the pedal to have this in the same way that a drive, you know, has different drives have their own different flavor. I want the reverb to be the thing offering that. I don't necessarily want to be controlling every single last fragment of the sort of capabilities of the pedal. So I'm very much into the simplicity of the Eventide. That for me has been my the winner for me out of these ones.
Yeah, I think just looking at some of the dealers, you know, they stock a lot of different pedals now. Yeah, actually, just as a quick correction, because I thought I'd just double check, Eventide, it wasn't called the Black Hole, it's called the Space 519. That was the
right.
That was the
algorithm was the Black Hole.
Black Hole. The algorithm was the Black Hole. The Space did a bit of everything. Still available now at £519.
Completely. Yeah.
In that you get room, plate, spring, hall, reverse, shimmer, mod, echo verb, dual verb, black hole, mangled verb, tremolo verb,
mangled verb.
Yes. Oh. Actually, my favorite one on the H9, there's an algorithm that's just on the H9 called the Space Time, which is delay, reverb, and chorus all in one algorithm, which I think is pretty nuts. Just a quick top level reverb roundup on a dealer here. So you've basically got the Space at 519, Big Sky at 449, Empress reverb pedal, also fantastic, 445, Night Sky 439, one that we haven't spoke about a lot, which is the Seymour Duncan Dark Sun 399. Yeah. And one thing that's popped into shops very recently, which loads of people have been raving about, and I'm super tempted myself, is the Vrooms from Death by Audio, which is another one this Ooh. Year. So I think Gear of the Year is going to be very...
It's going to be the Reverb, the competition. Yeah,
Reverb pedal of the year. Maybe that's a separate category because they're... all four of the, well, a couple of those have definitely come out this year, and that Rooms Reverb looks incredible, especially when it's got a preset called Gong. You're like, that's the kind of reverb that I want.
Yeah, I'm excited by that.
In fact, just looking through some of the things that are out there now, it is mad how many reverbs there are that are doing that, a similar sort of thing. It's just there's a lot out there.
Yeah, creative reverbs are definitely the new standard, which is very exciting for me. I'm still my shimmer of choice at the moment is still the Neural DSP Corey Wong shimmer that comes with the Corey Wong pack. But you know, obviously that's because I can just play through my door at home at the moment. But it is. An absolutely fantastic reverb to have as a backline to have. I hope Neural DSP put it in a box at some point. That would be good. Well, I guess they do with that big multi effects thing that they do.
Yes, the Quad Cortex, I guess, will be the thing that everyone's waiting to try.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, super keen to see what happens with that. But yeah, the Quad Cortex. I've seen a few demos that have come out recently, and I guess that will give you all the plugins in one.
Oh, exciting. Yeah, that would be grand. Although I do feel I'd only end up using the Corey Wong stuff as the other ones are maybe a little bit too metal for me personally, but the Corey Wong one, very, very good. Very good indeed. Now, Matt, we absolutely must talk about the Boss OC5. I spoke about it a bit on Bass Guitar Nerds this week because Bass Guitar Nerds came out the Friday after the Thursday that the OC5 was launched. But of course, it wasn't only the OC5 that came out. Also, Boss released a Pocket GT, which was a product I don't think I even understood what it did, so I need you to explain that to me. But also, we should talk about the OC5 a little bit.
Yeah, let's talk about the OC5 first. So, been working on this one for a while, and I've been super excited. I mean, it was one of those pedals that I've used an OC2 for a long time, as have many others, as do you, Joe. But actually, the OC3 has been what I would class as one of our legacy pedals. I mean,
I can't believe it's been around for as long as it has. We spoke about this on the Bass Nerds podcast.
Yeah, 2003, the OC5 came out.
Yeah,
the OC3, sorry,
came out. I remember getting my first one when I went to university, you know, and being excited that there was like an OC2 I could afford in the OC3.
Yeah, I think this is the interesting thing. So to a bit of a mini history lesson. So OC2, which obviously wasn't the first ever octave pedal, but it was the first, I guess, Boss octave pedal and kind of solidified the kind of standard of octave pedal in 1984, which is pretty mad, and has been a fan favorite for years.
Oh, it came out in 84. That one.
It did.
Oh, yeah. So the one I bought from you was the first year of production.
It was, yeah. Oh, 84. So 84 all the way through to 2002. It's obviously just mad, isn't it?
It's crazy.
But yeah, monophonic analog sound engine, you know, with a dry level and two, a sub octave and then a dual sub octave. And then the OC3 came, and we thought, oh, we'll put a bit of drive in there, and we'll put this range control, which basically allows you to adjust the frequency range of where the octave sound is effective. So you could tune it so just the E string or the E and A string, only they would have sound the octave effect. So that's great for, if you're playing a chord, and then you can have a bass note follow you. And then where the OC3 really took off from that was sort of modern acoustic players like Mike Dawes, John Gong.
Yeah, I was going to say Mike Dawes is a big advocate of the OC3 for that reason.
It allows them to do these big open acoustic chords but have this sort of huge ringing bass. But of course, in the last 18 years, technology and other products have come along, things like the MicroPog, all of that sort of stuff. And we thought it was time that we could, especially after things like the SY1 and improving our tracking technology, we could do a whole new thing. So we were like, we should, you know, appeal to as many different uses of our octave pedal history as possible. So, you know, we'll put the OC2 in there. It allows us to recreate the sort of the exact, not only the exact sound, but the exact feel of an OC2. Right. And I literally A-B'd them side by side in my ES8 and was like, cannot tell the difference. They responded the same way, which I think was great. But then we also wanted to make sure that we kept the polyphonic thing in there and improve it for people that are using things like the POG or other octave pedals, and then also improve the range control and adapt that. So now it's got a lowest note mode, which means no matter where you play on the neck, the lowest note will always trigger the octave effect. And to tie it all together, we added an octave up because that was one thing that we were also missing. Oh, so, yeah. You know, a lot of people were like, oh, well, you know, what about an analog OC2 Wazer? I think, you know, for me, personal opinion, that it would have just been expensive. We still made OC2 for 18 years. If you think about VB2W or DC2W, those pedals were made for a really short amount of time. They're super expensive in the secondhand market. And that was, the Wazer was our chance to recreate that in a modern day, where something like OC2 has been around in some way or another for over 30 years.
Yeah.
So we thought we'd bring it all together. And for me, the killer thing for me is the price. I mean, it's £122, I think.
Oh, really? I didn't even realise that.
Yeah, so, oh, you know, it's cheaper than a lot of the other competition in the market for us.
You've wrecked the secondhand value of my OC2. Thanks very much.
Yes. Yeah, so it's great if you want the OC2 vibe, because it's got the vintage mode, gives you the full-on, you know, OC2 vibe. Plus, we can give you the octave up now, which is something you couldn't have on the OC2. A full polyphonic mode, which, you know, tracks amazingly well. Loads of clarity. Plus, you've got the octave up. And then we've got the range mode that allows you to dial in where you want the octave effect to come in.
Yeah.
I sent one to Rabir because I knew that he's used a micro POG for ages.
His video is wonderful.
And I saw him last week and he was just like, it's incredible. He's like, sound and feel. He was like, I didn't realize how much I was missing out with, you know, other pedals. He was like, amazing. You know, because the range mode doesn't get in the way. You know, if you're playing big chords, you've just got a sub octave behind you rather than your whole chord being down an entire octave. And, you know, having the wet dry out so you can send it out to a bass amp and stuff. So I think, you know, just a great pedal at a great price. And I'm so glad we sort of did it and still got to tell that sort of OC2 story, but bring a lot of the sort of modern stuff in there as well at a really competitive price point.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think that's kind of the cool thing. I didn't realise the price was quite that sort of aggressive and comparable to, you know, the Micropog, which I guess is the big sort of octave up octaver that's kind of dominated the market in that sense. The fact that you have access to all of those kind of a more transparent sounding version of a Micropog plus an OC2 all in one box for £122, I guess, yes, that is cool. I still wish it was an OC2W, but that is, you know, just because
Yes, I'm sure many others do as well, but yeah. I can honestly say, and I know you've tried one as well, Joe, but for me, like, A-being it, I'm like, It's if we want an OC2,
it's the same.
Yeah, it's the same.
It's the same, it's which the same. Which was very frustrating.
And we've optimized with a little bass switch on the back for low frequencies as well, which
that's
is quite
really
nice,
good. So. Yeah, you can switch between guitar and bass on a little flick switch on the top, which I thought was really good.
Yeah,
it's definitely a fantastic product. And the other thing's the Pocket GT, which you've explained to us a couple of times. Our private chats, and I've not understood what you meant.
Okay, so I'll pitch it a similar way to how I did it internally within Roland. And the way I kind of got a lot of people to think about it was, most people play guitar because they're inspired by someone else. You know, it's like, I want to play guitar because I love Jimi Hendrix or Slash or whoever. And a lot of these players now are using YouTube to sort of learn and engage with content,
right?
Because there's a million people, you know, guys like Justin Sandico, Martin Music, Paul Davids, Andy Guitar, you know, they're the four biggest tutors. They're putting out a video every day. We've got a million subscribers per channel, if not more. And all these people are like, how to play like Jimi Hendrix, or how to play it like this, or how to play like that, or how to play the blues, or how it's all online. And, you know, there's no better way than sort of engaging with that, with also playing along to backing tracks, you know. And there's great channels like Elevated Backing Tracks that just give you a great, you know, proper band that you can play along to. And I myself do the same thing, you know, if I'm just sort of going to jam around at home, or I'm sort of like, oh, I really need to learn this like one particular lick, I'll just go, rather than like back in the day when I first started playing guitar, it's like Ultimate Guitar Tabs, it's like some shoddy like word typed out tab,
mxtabs.net.
Yeah, classic. You know, if I want to learn how to play Polymath, you know, I might go, oh, you know, I'll just put how to play X. You know, I want to play the Mars Volta. So I want to play Deloused in the Comatorium by Mars Volta. No doubt someone on YouTube has created a tutorial video on how to play that particular song and talks you through it bit by bit. It's probably tabbed it out. Way more informative than anything else. But not only that, you know, oh, here's how you dial in the sound, or it should sound like this. And that's great, but to do that and to really engage with it, you need to ideally have you're either watching on your phone through headphones, which means you've got no real way to play your guitar, so you're playing guitar unplugged, or you do what I do, you've got a laptop and some stereo speakers, but then you've still got to have an amp plugged in and a pedal board, and then, you know, that's not exactly portable, but it's also not exactly practical, can't turn up the volume, this, that and the other. So we thought, why don't we make something that integrates all of the software side of stuff and all of the hardware side into one box? So Pocket GT is a full multi-effects processor, but it's also, it pairs with an app over Bluetooth to give you full control over YouTube content. So you can literally dial up a video into the app. It streams audio to the Pocket GT, so guitar and headphones into the Pocket GT, and then you can play along all in one sort of like portable sort of little package. But it just means that all your guitar processing's there, all your effects are there, your amps, you know, everything you could want, play along with the content. Brilliant. But we thought, since YouTube has got a lot of other options, we've also been able to add in a sound marker function, which is the thing that I've been messing around with the most, which allows you to basically mark video content for automatic sound changes. So quite often I'm like, you know me, love a bit of Pink Floyd, but you can't exactly play David Gilmour clean for 15 minutes, you know. And if I'm sort of like, you know, if I haven't got my pedal board out of my amp, it's sort of a bit like, it's a bit uninspiring, or you're stuck with one sound, or you're trying to switch between apps to change sound. This just, you know, you can set all the sound changes you want, and then the sound will just automatically change as you're playing. So it's great for actually
being, that's fantastic,
way more engaged in it. You know, transport controls on the front of the Pocket GT. You can edit all the sounds on the Pocket GT if you want. It runs on battery, so it's nice and portable. So if you're taking it out and about, or you travel quite a lot, maybe not so much now, but in the future, you know, so actually just for like, all the time we used to get people come into GAC or you know, when I was at Anderton's, being like, oh, I'm sort of on the road all the time and I need a guitar and amp to play in the hotel room or whatever. And it's like, you don't even need that. You literally just need this and a guitar and a pair of headphones. And it's a similar idea to kind of things like the Wazer Air, but I've been having way more fun with this just because of the automatic sound change. And actually for learning, it's got like A/B, so you can loop a section of a particular song on YouTube and it will play round. You can learn over the top of it.
That is very good.
So it's
very, you know, practically thought out.
Yeah, it's, I guess it's not aimed at the sort of necessarily maybe some of the hardened guitar nerds listeners who are into like having, oh, myself included, having like three amps and eight pedal boards and plugging it all in. But I think for a lot of people who just sit and learn and engage with YouTube content, or, you know, take, for example, a teacher, you know, we're starting to talk to teachers about, oh, you could do a specific Pocket GT lesson. It's like, you, and the student can have all of your sounds as well. So, you know, you could do a play along to, you know, Guns N' Roses, and here's all the Guns N' Roses sounds against this backing track. So I think it's a great way to actually, like, learn tracks.
Yeah.
Way more than, yeah, reading, you know, ripofftabs.net. and someone's typed a real shoddy one into Word in the wrong key. You know, and there's a bunch of other things you can use. You can use it as a USB interface. So if you're on the road and you want to record, you can plug it straight into your computer and record straight into Logic, for example, and stuff like that.
Yeah, this sounds really good.
But I've just left it on my desktop, just plugged in. I actually have it plugged into my Mac, and then I have the session player for all the YouTube stuff on my Mac, and then I just have guitar and headphones plugged in. Yeah, it's great.
Very good.
Really good fun.
Very cool. Very usable. Well, you know, that's we're actually coming to the end. That's pretty much us done for this week's regular episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. For the second week, or maybe even third week in a row, I've failed to introduce the new patrons at the start of the episode. So I must apologise to both Russell and to Abe Matthews, who have
Don't apologise.
They've both joined us at the $10 tier.
Okay, fine. You should apologise twice, really.
Yeah, so, well, I mean, you know, their names are going to be sung in the song at the end of this podcast, but I do apologise for not introducing you both at the start.
Oh, you did it twice. Good work.
Yes, there you go. I did. I got it in. Wonderful. And also, we're approaching the end of the month as well, which means, we'll be entering into October very soon, which means we'll be choosing a new charity for Guitar Nerds to donate to for the month of October. Of course, for this month, we've donated to Girls Rock London. And I really must get into the habit, I think, of at the start just talking a bit about who we're donating to each month. You know, a charity that we think is a good idea for you, dear listener, to get involved in if you can. Girls Rock London are a charity that you can check out on girlsrocklondon.com, and it's a music project for girls, women, trans and non-binary people in London. They run music projects where participants learn about music making and performance. Their programs are aimed at complete beginners as well as experienced musicians, and provide a platform for girls, women, trans and non-binary people to find and develop their voices. A great little charity, which JD, who's part of the bass, one of the hosts of the Bass Guitar Nerds, is in fact involved in, as his partner Daisy is one of the, you know, the heads of this charity unit. And actually, I did a part four of the home recording podcast, which came out last week. I was talking to Focusrite, who also donate regularly to Girls Rock London to you know, help represent them and make sure they have all the equipment that they need to, you know, to continue all of the great things that they're doing. So yes, dear listener, check them out if you can. But I think next, I can't remember, when is this month over? Either next week or the week after, I'll be announcing our
30 days have September.
Right.
So
I don't know what day is it.
Oh, today's the 21st.
Does that mean it will still be this month next week?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, okay. Will, yeah. Fine. Okay. Good. Well, then it will be the week after that we'll do that. But I'm going to try and get in the habit of just, you know, saying a very brief thing about the charity each week. Anyway, we're going to be continuing over on Patreon, where we're going to be taking questions from the Facebook group. We've got some great questions this week about squires and PRSs and yeah, all sorts of other fun things. You can of course join us there. On patreon.com/guitarnerds. We have three tiers of support that you can offer us on Patreon, the $1, $5 and $10 tier. $1, you will get the podcast ad-free and early each week. At $5, you will have that, plus access to the entire back catalogue of additional episodes. And at the $10 tier, you get all of those things, plus your name sung in a song at the end of each week's episode. We're getting ever closer to the point where I'm going to change the song, because I've kind of run out of different funny voices to sing it in. So yes, I need to kind of come up with a reinvention of that song at some point soon. But yes, you can of course follow us on all the social media platforms with @GuitarNerds, and join us on our Facebook community with facebook.com/groups/GuitarNerdsForum. Thanks very much for tuning in, and we'll be back next week with more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Cheers, gang.
Bye.
Russell, Christian, Abbott, Ty Allen, Yogi, the guitarist, Modi, Modius, Kyle, Harris, Cloud, Lifter, Todd, Simons, Ridge, Creswell, Joe, Harper, Sean Hughes, Michael Howe, Brian Hansen, Shane M, Jeffrey Wax, Eric Hemmer, Samuel Frost, Brian Einzel, Gavin Van der Linden, Jacob McGee, Andy Manley, Scott, Utting, Robert Butterworth, Simon Milburn, Mark Isdal, Cutter Wacky, Stuart Robson, Neil Milton, Christian Lamanson, Nick Rivett, Keith Adams, Michael McVeigh, Eric Vile, Andrew Good, Joe Puttick, Marin Peters, Richard Sudworth, Jake Cutmore, Jamie Kim, Ken Sayers, Adrian Day, Abe, Matthew Zorn, Abel, John Angen, Rob Grew, Tucker Abbott, Bennett, Amy Cooper, Ross, Edwards, Nate Nagel, Stephen Burke, Aaron Sherman, Dave Lee, Matt Bellamy, Jay Gray, Scott Kennedy, Blake Weiland, Christopher Lowe, Seth and Hans, Sam, Derek Rich, Rob Novick, Steve Merkel, and Judy Shaw, Robin Smith, Brad Page, Andy McKenzie, Scott O'Brien, Paul Corrigan, and Will Clare. Yes, they're the best and they test all my knowledge. E-podcast, like a porridge. Is it Fender? Is it Boss? Is it Boutique? What's the cost? Can you spare $10? $10, spend it all the time. Listening to Guitar Nerds on the podcast, it's sublime. Can I get another glass of whiskey filled up to the brim? Are you ready for the chorus? Guitar Nerds are gonna sing.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.